The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I'd like to talk about equanimity. And in thinking about it today, I thought of someone walking across a tightrope with a large balance beam in their hands. And as I think we know, that a tightrope walker is a lot more safe, balanced, easier to hold the balance with a long pole that's helping to create the center of gravity that's more stable than if they're just standing upright themselves on the wire. Equanimity, the development and cultivation of mental equanimity, is our balance pole that we carry as we go forward into the world, go across the tight rope wire of our lives, where we can encounter all kinds of challenges. Some of them wonderful things, some of them very difficult things. And we have to keep going. Sometimes we have to keep going. We have to go to work, we have to go to the hospital, we have to do whatever, take care of. And how do we do it so we don't fall? How do we do it so we don't have some kind of collapse or cause problems as we go along? And so we can have a balance pole that keeps us balanced, keeps our center of gravity in the middle, and makes it more difficult for us to wobble, tip over. And that balancing pole, as I said, is equanimity. And cultivating that strong equanimity allows us to be in the world, not separate from the world, but in the world, and keeping our balance. I think sometimes I get the sense that equanimity is not a popular idea. I think people associate it with being indifferent, aloof, something like that. But another image for equanimity is rafting, kayaking down a river. And where there's a lot of rapids and a lot of rocks and a lot of obstacles as we go down the river, it can be quite dangerous. Waterfalls to go over, and it can be very dangerous and maybe easy to get hurt. But we come down into where the river is really wide with no rocks. It's no longer noisy as it is in the rapids. It's quiet hum flowing straight and strong. And it's definitely going. It's going harmoniously, smoothly. It's just like flowing in this really nice way. So when we have equanimity, the flow of our life is quiet. The flow of our life is not so dangerous. The inner dangers that we carry with us are no longer there. The inner rapids of that we trip over and get caught in. And rather than being diminished by equanimity, equanimity allows us to enter the flow of life, the flow of our stream of our life, and be in the place where it flows freely and openly and moves right along. And we can move into our life and through our life with much more ease, with the equanimity. So equanimity is two different things in this practice of mindfulness. One is that it is balance. That it's the ability to stay centered and balanced and not to wobble, not to be pushed around by things. And the classic reference point for what pushes us around or loses our balance is said to be, one of them, if it's a classic teaching, is the four worldly winds. So there is pleasure and pain, gain and loss, some people call it success and failure, praise and blame, and fame and disrepute. And they're called the worldly winds because when they blow against us and we're caught by them, we're entangled with them, then they push us around and knock us over. But to be balanced such a way that praise and blame can come, success and failure, loss and gain of things, possessions, and even pleasure and pain, to be able to stay balanced with it all, equanimous in the middle of it all, so that we're not swept up into reactivity. We don't collapse out of despair or a sense of, you know, pity or victimhood, or we don't get angry and blame and push and don't hold on to something. This allows us to flow in the river without hitting the rapids. This allows us to kind of walk across the tightrope of life without falling in. So the sense of balance. And the other form of equanimity is known as upekkha, commonly known word, for, Pali word for equanimity. And upekkha literally means to look, overlook, to look at, to look towards. And I think of it as having the, you know, higher perspective or a bird's eye view of the situation. And it is a form of wisdom to be able to look at a situation kind of from above or broadly or wisely. And in seeing the situation, understanding the situation in a broad way or a bird's eye view of the situation, then not getting deluded by it, not getting, again, entangled by it, not grasping at it or pushing at it or holding onto it or pushing it away or all the ways in which the mind gets kind of wrapped up. But some kind of vision that we have of life and activity that keeps us equanimous or balanced or peaceful or not caught up. Equanimity is a very important part of mindfulness practice because mindfulness is one of the very strong cultivators of equanimity. And especially if we really allow ourselves to engage well with mindfulness, like meditation. And what I mean by this is that if we sit and meditate every day, rain or shine, every day, whether we want to or don't want to, every day, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, every day, whether we think that it's we're being successful or not successful, every day, whether we think we're going to give praise by all our neighbors for being the best meditator, if they just knew the bliss you're having, or we're afraid to tell anybody we meditate because our meditation is so poor and we're afraid of the criticism, you know, that people are going to give us. Whatever it is, if we just sit regardless of what's happening, what begins to happen is that we learn to recognize the reactions, the thoughts that we have in relationship to what's happening. And we, for example, just with thinking, we watch ourselves thinking a certain way about it, and we let go of the thoughts and come back to center, come back to the breath. And rather than giving into those thoughts, believing those thoughts, acting on those thoughts, by sitting in meditation and letting go of them and coming back over and over and over again, we learn how to stay balanced. We learn how to stay not caught. Learn how to stay equanimous in the midst of all kinds of things that come our way. And so it's actually important for the deeper or fuller potential of mindfulness meditation that your meditation not always be enjoyable, not always be good, not always be pleasant. Not that you're supposed to go out there and make it unpleasant and try to drum up difficulties to sit with them, but if you just live a relatively normal life and sit every day, eventually everything comes through the field of meditation. And to, in a certain way, to when it's difficult, to understand that this too is an important part of the training, to not get caught. And when it's really pleasant, that's just as important to not get caught. We can watch what the mind does when we have a pleasant meditation and the wanting or the fantasy. I mean, I was younger, I used to have pleasant meditations and I would start fantasizing about, sometimes by giving Dharma talks about how great it was or telling my friends, or I'd fantasize about going on a retreat. Now I'm ready to go on a retreat and I would think about the retreat. And, you know, the paradox of it all was that I would be thinking about how great it is to meditate. And while I was lost in those fantasies, I'd stopped meditating. I think it would have been better if I'd appreciated the wonderfulness of the meditation and then kept doing it rather than, you know, go off in my fantasies. So to sit, and every time we let go of our thoughts, it's a little bit of a training in equanimity. It doesn't mean that we're going to it doesn't mean that we're supposed to be indifferent to things, but rather to come to a place to see things without the mind being for and against all the time, without the mind getting caught up in its fantasies and its ideas and commentaries, to rush to judgment that goes on. Equanimity is the opposite of a rush to judgment. So to learn how to sit, and so a very common phrase I like to say is that if you're only free when you're comfortable, you're not really free. If you're only equanimous when things are going well, you're not really equanimous. And so the training is to learn how to be equanimous in all situations. And so this thing of, you know, sitting and letting go of thoughts and sitting and letting go of the reactivity, just enough so we can stay present. Another thing about meditation or mindfulness that really can make a big difference for becoming equanimous, and which makes the practice, I think, kind of real and authentic, is that mindfulness in Buddhism in general, it's less about holding on or trying to be an ideal. Like if the ideal is to be equanimous, okay, now I have to make myself equanimous. It's much more realistic to think about it as we're studying, we're bringing our mindfulness to what it is that makes it takes away the equanimity. We want to get to know our reactivity. We want to get really use our time in meditation and other times to step back and really study what it's like when we get angry and pissed off or resentful or we start blaming. What's it like when we get filled with fear and pull back? What's it like when we kind of are wanting things in order to fill the hole we have inside or fill our discomfort? What happens to the, what forms of conceit, what forms of self-identity or self-definition do we have that gets challenged and threatened in such a way that we lose our balance, we lose our equanimity? So, you know, not to criticize any of this stuff or not to, you know, make yourself a bad person for have reactivity, but also not to let the reactivity just have a free ride. Mindfulness is the way to allow ourselves to be the way we are and then study it, be mindful of it, see it, hold it in awareness. And by study, I don't necessarily mean we kind of analyze it, just kind of really feel it and register it and be with it, hold it in awareness. And that very act of turning towards a reactivity that we have and holding it in awareness is a form of equanimity itself. Because it's just seeing it for what it is and just allowing it to be there and just kind of being present. As we have this presence for our reactivity, it's inevitable we'll start understanding it, we'll learn from it, we'll learn its tricks, we'll learn how we get tricked into becoming reactive, we'll learn to recognize the early warning signs of reactivity, how we're feeling uncomfortable or tense. Or what beliefs are coming up or judgments are coming up that are warning signs. And we'll learn to kind of navigate our inner territory, inner mind, inner reactivity, and know how to not to pick it up, not to get involved. Step back. Learn to recognize it. And this ability to see more and more clearly what's going on is a natural byproduct of that, is we're naturally more equanimous. Not because we're making ourselves equanimous, but because we have this clear vision of what's happening. And the clearer our vision, clearer understanding is of what's happening internally and around us, the easier it is to be in balance, the easier it is to be not to be in reactivity. It was a big surprise for me when I went and practiced in Asia, practiced in Burma. And I think that the word equanimity when I was young was probably in my vocabulary, but I don't know how often I used it, if at all. But it was a surprise to me to start doing Vipassana retreats and to discover this, you know, powerful river of equanimity, this powerful strength that felt like so harmonious, so soothing, so settled, so healing, that the word, the concept that that fit it was the concept of equanimity. And to feel the health of a mind which can see and not react. A health of a mind that's centered in itself in a deep way, or the body that's centered in itself in a deep way, and doesn't lean forward, doesn't lean back, doesn't go for and against. It was such a wonderful thing to discover this, that the mind has this capacity. And what it felt like to me when I first discovered it this way, it's a natural faculty of the mind. It's a thing in its own right, just like, I don't know what, memory is a faculty, or doing arithmetic is a faculty, or thinking is a faculty, or having faith is a faculty. Mindfulness, attention is a faculty of the mind. So equanimity is a faculty. And if that's true, then it's a little bit like a muscle. And it's a muscle that gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And who knows when we're going to need that strong muscle? Who knows when we're going to come across a crisis, a challenge? Or perhaps for many of us, it's arrived. We're here now in the COVID-19 era, and we don't know what's coming. We don't know that. Sometimes I had a feeling the last 2 weeks there was a tsunami coming, and I didn't know what was going to happen, and what was the difficulties we're going to have, what was the challenges we're going to be facing, So then the question is it appropriate in times of crisis, is it appropriate in times of the coronavirus to cultivate equanimity? Is it appropriate to study our reactivity, our fear, our distress, our anger, or whatever we do, and study it to discover how we're become reactive, how we're judging other people for what they do or don't do, how we're judging the limitations we're living under. Maybe we feel resentful that we have to be shelter in place, or who is it supposed to tell me? I know better. So what are we for and against? What are we reacting to? Is there equanimity in how we are? Is there peacefulness? Is there calm? The more the crisis, the more valuable equanimity and calm and peace are, because we think clearer, we see more clearly, we can act better. And so what happens in these kinds of situations is a great opportunity, because the ways in which we've been triggered to be reactive, the greater the crisis, the greater the reactivity, the more it represents something deep inside of us, some deep belief, deep attachment, deep conceit, a deep self, kind of self-identity we're organized around. And to really take this as an opportunity to practice with it, to learn now what it's like to let go of thoughts, to let go of a thought, come back to clarity, to now look and really see, what is this reactivity about? What am I believing? What am I trusting my life into? Some people put their trust into fear. Some people really trust being angry. Some people really trust acquiring and getting and making themselves safe and secure. All kinds of things. And, to trust trust things that make us more agitated. What is if we trust equanimity? Trust being calm. Just enough that we're willing to study the inner lawyers that we have arguing for why we should be agitated, why we should be upset, why we should be distressed, why we should worry. Can you have that debate inside of yourself? Can you see clearly enough what is going on? And that's, you know, the benefits of mindfulness, to be able to stop and look and take your time. What's going on here? And feel it and sense it and be with it until it starts becoming clear what's going on. To start seeing the underlying assumptions and biases that are happening. To start seeing some of the subtle emotions that are actually fueling and driving the show. To start seeing some of the ideas we have about me, myself, and mine. Some of the ways in which we have been trained or taught that this is the kind of person I have to be. I have to be a person who worries. I have to be a person who's angry. Or I have to be a person this way or that way. To keep coming back and study all this. To learn how to be equanimous. So a few things about cultivating equanimity. So I've said a few things about doing it for oneself. If or when we need more equanimity, one of the ways to learn it is to be around equanimous people and to study them or to take them in or register how they are. Because we have like mirror neurons. We have this resonance. We have this way of feeling or sensing how other people are. That's not just ideas, oh, that's a calm person, that's an equanimous person. But there's a way of, we kind of learn by osmosis, we learn by example. It's really clear with young children how much they learn by example, how people are emotionally and energetically. But adults can also do that. And if you spend a little bit of time around calm people, let it register, take it in, if you have the good fortune to be around those people, linger a little bit, or to, you know, kind of be close enough to let their vibe, their demeanor kind of penetrate or absorbed into you. You might learn something. You might touch your own capacity, your own muscle for equanimity. And another thing that can support equanimity is a deep investigation into what is it that you trust. Not what you think you trust, but if a Martian anthropologist came to the earth and watched your behavior, your demeanor, your emotional reactions to things, and maybe didn't speak your language, and were just watching you, what would they decide that you trust? Oh, that person trusts being irritated. That person really trusts complaining. That person trusts hiding. That person trusts, you know, trying to be invisible and pull away. And what do we trust? What would a Martian anthropologist see in you? But what does this person trust that you don't think is trust because it's not doesn't belong in the trust category? Because we don't say we trust fear. We don't say we trust conceit. But the Martian anthropologist might say that for you. So to what do you trust? And that might also clarify and help you find your way to more equanimity. There's a beautiful teaching that I was inspired by it from Thich Nhat Hanh. When the boat people were fleeing Vietnam and going out into the seas, crossing over to the Philippines, and these small boats, they were way overloaded with people, and the sides of the boat were just above the waterline. And then the waves and storms would come. Many people died. Thich Nhat Hanh, a Vietnamese monk, a Buddhist monk, would apparently sometimes he went to the beaches of the Philippines and receive them and to help them get integrated and take care of them. So he spent a lot of time talking with them and learning about their faith and what happened. And one of the conclusions he came was a wonderful metaphor for other things as well. He made the statement that if one person in these overcrowded boats, if one person remained calm, it would keep the whole boat safe. If one of us can be calm and equanimous and peaceful, what benefit can that create for our world? When other people are becoming anxious, other people are being upset, how do we become the person that conveys equanimity and peace to the people around us? Wouldn't that be a great gift? Wouldn't it be a great gift if the children going up had encountered someone who really expressed a feeling of deep equanimity, deep calm, even a sense of safety because of that, in this world as they walk through the world? For a child to pick to see that that's possible, as opposed to being around and seeing people are always anxious. What's it like to be an equanimous person who's helping anybody who's in trouble? The world needs all of us at this point. I think that's one of the lessons of this COVID-19 time. Everyone is needed to support and participate in trying to make a difference, to slow down this virus, slow down the death rate, and come out the other end as best we can. Everyone needs to support the social distancing. Everyone needs to support the medical staff, the people. Everyone needs to try the best they can to stay out of the hospital for any reason besides if they're really sick. I was really touched when I heard that in France, bicycling is outlawed right now because they don't want anybody to have a bicycle accident and end up in the emergency room. So if you have to drive your car, drive really carefully. Don't have an accident. This is not the time to end up in the hospital. The world needs us, needs all of us. And may it be that this practice of mindfulness that we do, may it be that it makes us the kind of people who support the world to be a better place. May this practice and how we're developed and grow and changed by it help us to be calmer, peaceful presence that can help compassionately, kindly, caringly help make this a better world. May all beings be well and happy. Thank you all very much.